Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of What Most People Figure. We are into September. I'm going to start sounding like my mum. What happened to August? I mean, I do not know. I do not know where August went. And I don't know if it's the lack of sunshine or stuff, but there was a bit in like early August. I was flying, man. I had a suntan. I felt good. And now I'm knackered and I'm pale. And I'll bring in my guest now, Francis Foster, not just because I said that I'm pale, but Francis...
And knackered.
I mean, that feeling where you sleep 10 hours, and apologies to anyone who's going, oh, Jeff, what's the matter? Did you win too much money in the lottery? That feeling where you sleep for 10 hours, but you wake up tired and feeling like someone kicked the shit out of you in the night. Is that just middle age or am I ill?
No, mate, that's called being middle age. I feel that too, mate. And... It's brutal. Being 42. Why didn't no one explain to me? What do you mean, shut up?
I'm 47.
Right, yeah.
Although there's people listening to this going, they're probably saying the same to both of us, mate. But I'm glad to hear that you're feeling it early. That does actually cheer me up.
I'll be honest with you, yeah. I know, Jeff, like your audience are of a certain vintage. I have to admit.
You're going with this. Just because there was that one night in Cardiff where they stared you out, And you put it all down to age, like an age racist, mate. What you been up to at the moment? I know that you're doing some live shows now, but we were just saying before the record started that there are one or two venues that are a bit cautious about booking you.
Well, yeah. So with one venue, I did a show with Leo Kurse, the infamous Leo. We got accused of being a right-wing comedy night, and we had certain members of the comedy, shall we say, community, try and cancel us and contact the brewery in order to get the night cancelled. Mm. So we had that. And then I had a text message from a promoter who said, "Hi, Francis, sorry for the delay regarding bookings. I would love to book you, but right now, to be honest, I'm a little scared to. In the current climate, I'm worried about booking a few comedians, including yourself. It's not the content of your set that I'm worried about, simply the association with free speech and you talking to a few people who aren't on the, inverted commas, acceptable list of the mainstream media."
Let's just stop there. The association with free speech.
Yes.
I mean, it's so funny that there is this issue, and it happens in mainstream media commentators, where they will sometimes say words like free speech. They go, oh, you know, he's one of these free speech guys. Or you know, it might be seen as a bit libertarian. And you go, you do realise in most of the world, both those things are seen as being generally quite positive things.
Yeah, and if they're not seen as being positive things, it's because the people saying them are authoritarian and they want to control the speech. I've shared this with quite a number of US comics now. And I'm like, you think I'm lying when I talk about the UK comedy scene? And they can't believe it. They cannot believe the insanity of the fact that you're associated with free speech. And that means that, you know, that is somehow dangerous, evil and wrong.
I would argue that historically, comedy has been associated with free speech. I mean, the literal point of a jester was to speak truth to power. That was where it all began, right? Admittedly, sometimes the jester would get killed for going too far. But I would say that the inception of comedy lay somewhere in there. Look, all I can say is if you do see Francis doing live days, do support it because, you know, money talks and bullshit walks. So actually people attending gigs helps. But I tell you what, in this environment, there are still people that this UK comedy, I would say, is more timid than US comedy. We're still in this sort of cocoon of thinking it's like, you know, 2017. And actually, I think generally the public have moved to a different place. So do support those gigs wherever you see them. And this week, we're going to be talking about the Labour Party. Now, some people might say, well, Jeff, you do seem to be quite gleefully climbing into them. One of the consequences of the Tories being on 120 seats is that Labour are everything at the moment. all anybody is looking at, and they've had quite a week, whether it's from slum landlords to continuation of their hyperbolic doom and gloom policy to suspending certain arms sales to Israel and pissing off Washington. So we're going to talk about all that. We're going to talk about the Oasis tickets. First up, the question all of Britain is asking. Now I sound like an FM radio DJ. The question all of Britain is asking. Francis, did you get an Oasis ticket?
No, I didn't get an Oasis ticket.
Did you try?
No, I didn't. And I
loved
Oasis.
Do you give
Oasis.
A shit?
You know what? I really loved Oasis back in the day. I really did. I remember, I think, being... definitely maybe came out in 94. For my 13th birthday, my dad got me a little ghetto blaster. And
can't call it that, mate.
All right, a little stereo system.
Thank you.
And the CD, definitely maybe. And I remember I opened my bedroom window in South London and then put on Rock and Roll Star, track number one, yeah. And blasted it out on my pathetic tinny little ghetto blaster. I'm not going to be silenced, Jeff.
Can't say that, mate.
Yeah, well, I've just said it. What are they going to do?
Oh, God, there goes another gig.
So they were happy days, mate. I'm not going to spend half a grand to watch Oasis. Did you try?
Well, look, we're getting into the subject. I didn't try.
Oh, he doesn't
want
to answer the question. Typical Jeff, wanting to remain in the mainstream.
Well, I don't want to ask the question when all I was doing was literally setting up what we were talking about, and you've launched into the main body of the chat, you fucking amateur. We will get there. I went to Nebworth, but I didn't apply for tickets here, so we might get into why that was. And then in the Patreon-only section, we're going to be talking about the recent resurgence, well, the electoral victories in East Germany of the German far right. Sounds like fun, doesn't it? Yeah, it's fun. New patrons. We got a VIP patron. Remember, if you have the patron, you get the show early, ad-free, and with bonus content. And the fact that this is part patron-funded means that during October, I'm going to be doing extra breaking news episodes weekly about the US election. So don't keep up with the actual facts of it. Just consume it in a bite-sized form with me at the end of each week in October. And helping support that is our VIP. And as you know, Francis, as a long-term friend of the show, we roast the name. So we're going to do Stephen Netting. Stephen Netting, that is a very effeminate name, isn't it? Stephen Netting.
Stephen Netting, yeah, he does sound
Stephen
like...
Stephen Lingerie.
Yeah, he sounds like he would be the man in charge of costumes in a particularly mediocre Amdram group.
Oh, yeah, that's a great shout. And what kind of production? Would he be doing, like, a modern thing? Or he'd be doing that thing of a twist... on an old show. It's kind of like West Side Story, but get this, Francis.
Yeah.
It's gangs from London.
Exactly. Mm? Or West Side Story, but Israel-Palestine, to give it a modern, like, up-to-date twist.
That would be a bold shout. I'd watch that.
Yeah. I mean, so would I, actually, just to see. It would just be nice to have somebody else get their shows cancelled for a change.
I'd go to that just because I'd want to see just, well, whether they ever got a performance on due to all the boycotts.
Yeah, exactly. And do you know what? It'd end up probably selling out just because of the notoriety it created.
I would fund it. Should we just fund that? Like that idea, West Side Story, but about the Middle East.
Yeah, I think it'd be great. What could go wrong?
I mean, like the Maria.
Yeah.
I just get a girl who's Sharia. No, I'm not going there.
Yeah, it writes itself.
It writes itself. Domain talking point. So David Domain, super patron, who keeps us up to date with issues arising from previous shows. David says, we were talking about Kamala, the infinite name changing, Kamala.
Yeah.
We're supposed to pronounce it. She says that we're supposed to pronounce it as in Kamala, like as in you put a Kamala at the end of a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Kamala, as in the punctuation mark.
Kamala.
Yeah. Okay. So now if you get a name wrong, why are you? You're a racist. We also spoke about the fact that, in her appearance at the Democratic Committee, that she was wearing something called a pussy bow.
What?
So these are these bows. I know. These are these bows that go on the front of a woman's blouse. And it's indeed another name for a pussycat bow. I think it would have been better to stick with the full name there because pussy bow is misleading. Or, and this is probably a better word, a lavalier, if you wanted to be classy. So it's a bow tied to the neck, and this accessory originates from 19th century France.
That sounds like something Stephen Netting would be into, mate.
Stephen Netting would be all Stephen Lingerie. I really hope that his mates just start calling him Stephen Lingerie.
Yeah.
Gigging in Glasgow. I also spoke about gigging in Glasgow. I was talking about having to follow Kevin Bridges in about 2008 and dying on my arse. David says that Ken Dodd once remarked, Freud said that comedy is the conservation of psychic energy. The problem with Freud is he never played Glasgow Empire on a Friday night.
Hey.
And Des O'Connor, he got such a bad reception in Glasgow that he fainted on stage. And Eric Morecambe used to joke, good evening, I'm Des O'Connor, thud. It's a bit fucking mean, isn't it? I mean, I know Morecambe's a legend, but the Forkies has fainted on stage. Jeez. The circuit's changed. See, that alone would get you a 2-year suspension from the modern circuit.
Oh, it would do. And then it would generate about 2 years worth of Facebook posts about punching down on the fainting community.
What most people think.
Okay, the thank you and the fuck you. I would do the thank you. I took my son to see AFC Wimbledon on Saturday. First things first.
Well, what had he done?
To say, that should be your team. You come from the same... Which football team do you support?
West Ham.
Right. So we grew up about half a mile from each other. I supported my local club, Wimbledon, and you went, how can I seem like a hard bastard? I'm going to support West Ham. I'm going to support West Ham. Me and Russell Brain.
yeah. Let's not associate me with Russell, please. I've already got enough problems, Jeff.
But I took him to the game. Wimbledon won 1-0. But I'm also doing a charity gig. Well, it's not a charity gig. It's a gig at Plough Lane. It's a fundraiser for the club and local charities. It's on the 27th of September. Rachel Fairburn is opening. Ian Stone is closing. And so I was there to do like social media video. And I said, wouldn't it be great if we filmed it in the dugouts? And wouldn't it be great if we went down by the side of the pitch, basically trying to blag my son by the side of the pitch?
Yeah.
Which happened. And his reaction, he's such a great lad. Like, he's a proper, like, Pixar kid. You know what I mean? He has that wondrous look on his face and stuff. And then I just thought, I'm going to have to go back to just bringing him to a game normally where we just sit in the cheap seats. I fucked it, haven't I, Francis?
Yeah, you have, mate. Yeah, what you've actually done, mate, is you've given him a taste of the good life that you can't possibly provide for him.
Yeah.
I flew business class once. And it's now ruined everything. It would have been better if I'd never flown it. You know what I mean? You get a taste of tea being served to you in a China mug.
Yeah.
Can't go back. It's impossible.
Yeah, aren't we into sort of a deeper point about pleasure and enjoyment generally? Wouldn't that then imply to all pleasure? Because mostly life is quite mundane and frustrating. So
not mine, mate. I'm smashing it.
Yeah. Well, you're 5 years younger, mate. You know what I mean? You still get erections. What is your fuck you?
My fuck you. I mean, there's just so many of them. Do you know what my fuck you is now, man? It's like, you know when you just, and it feels very inappropriate saying this on this podcast, but you know when you're sitting down and, you know, you're with mates or you're in a, you're at some kind of social gathering and then people bring up politics and you're like, why did you do that?
Yeah.
What good is going to come from you doing that? Like, and it happens everywhere. Like, the Americans are even more mental. Like, you sit there and they have full-on Barneys about Kamala and Trump. Everyone gets a hump and you're like, what have we all achieved with this? What have you actually achieved by doing this? What have you achieved? Like, great. So it's over, innit?
It is a problem. I've been on a WhatsApp group with my mates for years and it's great. But every time we sort of ban politics and every time it comes up,
yeah,
and then it gets tense. But what we have invented, and I'll share this with all men listening, is emergency tits. So emergency tits are when it's getting tense on a WhatsApp group. It's just somebody just share a photo of some boobs. Because, like, look, I don't care if it's politically incorrect or not, boobs placate men. Boobs placate men.
Yeah.
And then if you're going to carry on arguing after a photo of some boobs, then you've got a problem, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. It may not work as well if you've got gay friends.
Maybe, but it's still a maternal thing, isn't it? It's just, it's not going to be the sex thing. And look, if you don't feel comfortable posting the actual photo, not suitable for work, you just, in capitals, just say emergency tits.
That's brilliant.
I know, look, this is what Keir Starmer, you know what I mean? He's had a tough week. He should get me in. You know, I've got actual practical ideas that could make Britain better.
Yeah.
Speaking of Starmer, let's get into what has been quite a tumultuous week for the Labour Party. So when Labour got in, there was genuinely among quite a lot of my Labour voting friends was this idea that it's just going to be calm. We all remember Andrew Marr. Do you remember when he was on Question Time? He said, we've got a sense of the country, just more ease of itself, treading more lightly, all that shit.
Yeah.
And then 2 months later, it's genuinely been a tumultuous month, I would say, for Labour. Now, you can't, no one with any sense would hold Labour accountable for the kind of collateral of 14 years. But there's stuff happening now. They're making decisions now and they're communicating in a way and they are accountable for that. So one of the first things is this guy, Jaz Atwal, this Labour MP. And it breaks over the last week that he's basically a slum landlord. He's got 15 properties. So for one, this is going to be a surprise to the public because it's off-brand for Labour, isn't it? You kind of go...
What, Labour being hypocritical is off-brand?
Well, yeah, but I think this is the point. Over 14 years, people sort of forget. So, you know, that scandals can hit both parties. You just tend to hear more about the ones of the people who are in power. So he's got 15 properties. And if you said MP under fire for... you know, having slum properties in his portfolio, you're going, well, that's fucking... that. I'm immediately picturing a white male Tory MP, 58, called Sir Cecil Ponsingbourn, right?
Or Netting.
Stephen Netting, yeah, he sounds like a guy that was Shadow Minister for Health in the major years.
Yeah.
But so this guy, Jaz Atwal, and so it's a bit like the expenses scandal. A lot of people forget that when that broke, obviously there were loads of Tory MPs, but the only people that actually served jail time for the expenses scandal were Labour MPs, right? Mm-hmm. So it kind of goes against, you eat away at your own brand. He's immediately says he wasn't aware of this, Francis, because he's not going to say, oh, yeah, yeah, the rats. Yeah, 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 the disease and the ringworm. Mm. Yeah, oh, yeah, I was just meaning to get around to that. It was number 4 on my iPhone to-do list. And he's apologised. Keir Starmer said it's unacceptable. It's absolute. It's unacceptable. But didn't remove the whip or take further action. Now, there are some Labour MPs who are a bit cross because obviously we've had some of them have lost the whip for voting against the government on things a lot of left-wing people would support. But it seems that being a slum landlord is okay.
The reality is, and this is something that I'm really going to enjoy now, is watching the left turn against their own. Because nobody turns against their own quite like the left.
Oh,
do you know
beautiful.
What I mean? It's beautiful because they're so high and mighty. They're so morally pure. They're so convinced that they are the ones who are virtuous. That when then things start to go wrong or one of them slightly deviates from the party line, they go each other like ferrets, ripping each other's eyes out. And I'm here for it, mate.
I'm glad that the politics can provide entertainment for you, like in a way that bear baiting once did for the Elizabethans.
Yeah.
So then we've got Lucy Powell, I think is a minister in government, and she was defending the government's decision to withdraw winter fuel payments for any pensioners not on pensioner benefits, right? And so we've already had, you know, the financial black hole. Mm-hmm. Starmer tried, and I thought this is a fucking reach, to go, what we also have a societal black hole. You go... I don't think these metaphors work in the same way. Like the issue with the letter that was left to the Treasury in 2010, everyone gets that, right?
Can I just say you love that impression of Starmer?
I'm rinsing it, mate. I don't want the guy to get voted out.
This is you. This, you know how Shane Gillis, you know, is shot to stardom but partially with the Trump impression? You want to be Britain's Shane, don't you? This is what you want.
This is my moment. So the letter that was left by Liam Byrne in 2010, everyone understands that, right? We've all had someone stay at our flat and has ate all our food or, like, you know, drank all your beer, smoked all your weed and left a message saying, oh, sorry, there's nothing left, right? That makes sense. Once you start talking about a 20 billion black hole, a lot of people don't even know that a billion is 1,000 million, right? So they actually don't have context for that. And if you want evidence of that, look how many people think that the app for tracking people with COVID cost $37 billion itself, right? So I'm not sure how much that cuts through. Then you've also got the issue of it's like it's a societal black hole, which one is just really depressing, right?
Yeah.
And then to defend the winter fuel thing, Lucy Powell said that if we hadn't taken that action, i.e. removing it for people not on pensioner benefits, we'd have seen a run on the pound and the economy crashing. Really, Lucy Powell, do you really, really honestly think that the markets were sat there waiting and going, fucking hell, I'll tell you something, if they don't withdraw winter fuel payments from pensions not on benefits, we're going to have a run on the pound. The economy, I mean, like what it takes for an economy to crash, it didn't even crash in a technical sense after Liz Truss. So the point is the Labour Party talked a lot about lying, but let's try and be as fair as we can. They are being fundamentally dishonest about certain things. Do the public want to hear it, Francis? You know, they're doing the George Osborne playbook of come into power, say there's no money, say everything's terrible. But the point is, this is post-Osborne. You come in and try and do it again, the public are a bit weary and wary of that strategy.
Well, look, I mean, one thing that I find actually really interesting about Labour from a psychological point of view is they can get away with way more stuff than the Tories ever can. Can you imagine if Rishi Sunak stood there and just went, we're getting rid of the winter fuel allowance? Can you imagine what the headlines would be? Can you imagine what the limp-wristed vegan left-wing comedians would be writing? He wants to kill old people. Actually, they wouldn't care because they hate old people and old white people in particular. But you get my point. You wouldn't be able to get away with that. But Labour come in, they do it, and nobody utters a peep.
Well, I mean, there's been pushback, but I absolutely agree that the prism through which it's seen is that Tories would have done that because they're evil and they want to. Labour are trying to say it's the kind of like when your dad kicked the dog when you were a kid. Yeah. It's look what you made me do. Hey, son, all that noise. Look what you made me do. Yeah. And the point is I think a lot of people look at it and go, these difficult decisions that are coming in the budget, right? Do I believe that probably Labour might have quite liked to take away the winter fuel payment? Yeah, I think they would, because as I've said in this podcast, I think there's a logical reason for doing so. Do I think Labour would have already wanted to equalise capital gains tax, inheritance tax and various other wealth taxes? Yeah. So it's literally the same as 2010. If you said that when the Tories came in and did austerity, that it was all ideological, but you're not applying at least some of that to Labour now, you're not being consistent.
Yeah, and look, let's be honest, neither side are consistent. But I just really sticks in my craw when people go, oh, you know, we're just really morally virtuous and we're better. Oh, what's that, LD? You want 200 quid to heat your home? There you go. Fucking taking it off you so the markets don't crash. Heat it yourself, you old bint.
I do feel like a lot of your feeling today is going back to this letter from the brewery about your gig. It feels like you're very cross with the left today.
No, mate, listen, those were two separate incidents. One was a brewery and the other one was this £100 gig that they tried to cancel. I'm being silenced, Jeff.
I know, it's the left.
The left are trying to silence me.
But when you did that list then, you went the left vegan eating, I thought, please say tofu eating wokarati. Complete the set, for God's sake. Most people think. I suppose the point is, right, is Labour, there is a deficit. I mean, it is quite incredible as well that we have no discussion of what cause this deficit. Like the pandemic, people have forgotten that the pandemic costs a lot of money. I was arguing with this guy on Threads and he was saying, well, you know, I guess what you do, what the Tories do, which is just blame it on a war in Russia. I was like, and the pandemic. And he's like, yeah, but. I'm like, no, yeah, but. That cost a lot of money. It's the single biggest thing that's happened in my lifetime in terms of a disruption to public life. No one really wants to think about it. I suppose my fear with Labour, yeah, there is a budget deficit, and I'm for sound money, right? But there's also this fear that the economy was growing. It has been growing in the last two quarters, right? Inflation is down. I'm just slightly... Consumer confidence matters. Is there a chance that they might just choke off some of this by turning the sentiment so negative that people start getting a bit paranoid about spending again?
Well, I think the thing is, so let's go to the pandemic point. I think everybody has treated the pandemic like a bad one-night stand, where we're like, well, I'm just going to walk away from it and never think about it again. And that's going to be absolutely fine. And all my terrible behavior and things that I said or did doesn't really matter because it was a one-night stand. Who remembers it? And that includes everybody, individual, society, the government. And what people don't want to reconcile and accept is the pandemic has, and the spending during the pandemic, when it came to things like lockdown and other things and the apps and whatever else, has created a huge deficit that we are going to be paying back for decades.
It's created a black hole, Francis. give it its technical term.
You're so happy. You look like a little dog who's been told that he's going to go for a run in the park. You are absolutely delighted, Jeffrey.
I'm going to be running for 5 years, Francis. But with my tongue jauntily out of the side of my mouth. I didn't realise a Labour government would make me this happy. Because the thing about opposition, what I've realised, it's a hell of a drug, because what you have is hypothetical certainty. Oh, fucking hell. We haven't even mentioned the smoking ban outside pubs. I mean, I don't know why. And look, it does seem that polling suggests the British public do broadly support this. But let's also point out the British public thought that there should be a 10 p.m. curfew during lockdown. The
no.
British public.
No, that wasn't them. That was your audience, mate.
That was my look. My audience, mate. Do not knock the age of my audience, because they're the only ones with any fucking money that can actually afford to go to shows, mate. So you, when you do your next tour, you watch, bro.
You're just delighted they made it through the pandemic, mate.
Now you're being racist against old people. But this smoking thing, just the joylessness of the Starmer administration. It's like, all right, we're under fire for the winter fuel thing. Well, let's do something that we've seen polls well, but is so fucking joyless. And when you defend people's right to smoke in beer gardens or outside pubs, it's really interesting to see people's mindset currently is that you'll get like an onslaught of people going, smoking's bad. I'm like, yeah, I agree. I hate smoking. When I was a kid, all my family smoked, and me and my sister were the first people in our family not to smoke. We hated it. My sister was a militant terrorist in the house. She used to empty ashtrays into like my mum's bed as a protest against smoking. But what they can't seem to conceive of is that you could be against something but support people's right to do it. Same as free speech, right? It literally blows people's minds. And I was listening to a radio station, and like the presenter, he said, but I just don't understand why people should be free to do bad things. He actually said that and still thought that he was a liberal.
This is something that I find very interesting. And I see it with a lot of people where we've had guests on now who are from the progressive left on Trigonometry. And one of them went, yeah, I didn't realise cancel culture was bad until it started happening to my friends. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Well, you only realise this was bad when it happened to someone you know. Do you not have something like called empathy?
They mock the idea of the thin end of the wedge. But the point is the moment a government says, well, you can't smoke outside a pub because people will be in the vicinity that won't want to smell the smoke or be around tobacco. Then you know, you're starting to eat into public spaces. And where does that... I mean, playgrounds, yeah, fair enough. I sort of understand that there are kids there. But I do think once you start legislating for things in the open air... And it sort of speaks to this weirdness of Starmer's agenda, because you remember in one of his... Like, before the actual election started, he was talking about the smell of skunk. The smell of skunk is everywhere. I thought, maybe this is this geezer's one definable political objective is the eradication of smells. All right, so if any Labour people are listening, you've probably got a bit irritated and a bit triggered there. So we will... It's really hard to talk about the Tories because, honestly, no one gives a shit what they're saying at the moment. But the leadership race, Francis, is hotting up.
Is it?
It warming up? No.
No, it's not even that, mate. It's like... You know what the Conservative leadership race reminds me of? You know when you put a pan on the hob or whatever it is? It's on one of those convection hobs or the electric hobs.
Yeah.
And you go away, you do something, you come back and it's like, it's been 15 minutes, right? The water will be boiling now. Is this even on?
Did those ever work, those electric hobs? They never...
No.
And all I ever feel like happened was one day you just put your hand on it before it cooled down sufficiently.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect analogy. So Kimmy Badenoch did her campaign launch this week and she, well, she did it on X, and in the video... She had David Tennant, Doctor Who, saying that he wished she would just go away and shut up and all that sort of stuff. It was quite punchy, I think. A lot of people criticised her and said, oh, it made her seem inconsequential, arguing with Doctor Who. I thought you missed the point of that video. That video was speaking to X exclusively. It was exactly the sort of content that would get shared and get her spoken about. So we've spoken about her a bit. I think that she, if you just want the Tories to be spoken about, I think Badenoch is a good option. And a lot of the British public just won't be aware of her yet. And when they see her speak with, whether or not you agree, but when she speaks with clarity and conviction, that might jolt them a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But then James Cleverly, he's entered the race. Now, I'm sort of quite like James. You know, I think he's got a genial style about him. I did see this week that he'd announced that if he was a leader, he'd reopen the Rwanda plan. And it's a little bit like, oh, that firework hasn't gone off. Like, mate, do not...
Get near that.
Go back to the Rwanda firework.
Do you know the problem is, Jeff? Because we interviewed on the show lots of all of these people. My criticism of the Conservatives is this. What's the point? You talk about all these things. You had 14 years to do it. You didn't do it. So why are you going to do it now?
Well, Badenoch addressed that. She said that they spoke right, but they govern left. That's quite an admission. I think it's pretty accurate.
And look, I think we all agree that that is true. That is true. That is. But my question is, well, then how can we trust you? Because let's count. We had five different Conservative leaders, didn't we, in the time? I think we had Cameron, we had May, we had Boris, we had Truss, we had Sunak.
Mm.
Nothing changed. They didn't do a single thing on immigration. So we had five different leaders. You achieved fuck all. So why am I going to believe you this time?
I really feel like you need to be the guy. You know when they do the hustings and the debate? I would love that. You would be such a viral clip. They go, we achieved fuck all. And then you would go viral and half the people were going, too right, bruv. And then the other half of the people were going, racist.
Yeah, cancel his gig.
You do look racist. You do look racist. You know what I mean? I know you're not, but you just you like the look, right?
I like the look. I've got the voice. I've got all of it, mate.
Yeah.
I just want my country back. It's not racist.
So just a quick hype here. We'll come to what Francis has got going on in a sec. I will be out on tour next year. So if you want to know about the dates early and get involved on the pre-sales and all that sort of stuff, get on my mailing list. Easiest way to do that is to go to jeffnorcott.co.uk. And I think that's the first time I've mentioned my website in 5 years of this podcast. Who gives a fuck about websites, really? But that is the best way to get on my mailing list. So just do join that. We're going to say hello to a few more Patreons while we're at it. We've got Brian. Brian is a one-worder, so that means that he's woke and doesn't want to be identified. I think he's one of the people that is campaigning to get Francis's gigs cancelled. Now, after today, I think go for it. Just keep going. This man is a fucking menace. All right, just sign me up. Rob Osborne. I'd call him Rosborne. I'd just make him a one name. Yeah. Rosborne. Yeah. Where's the place where all the aliens were in the US?
Roswell.
Roswell.
Rosborne sounds like it'd be somewhere that you'd play on your tour, mate.
Rosborne, why are you hating on my tour and my touring audience? Seriously, these are the people you need, bro. These are the people.
It's because you cancelled me, Jeff. I was doing your shows and then you cancelled me.
Yeah, yeah, because I'm tight. I don't have a support act anymore. I'll tell you something, the honest reason why is I had really great support acts and you guys would go at the beginning and fucking smash it and old man Norcott would have to fucking hobble on. And whatever pace, because you guys were invariably spoke quicker and were pacier and it just felt like, oh, fucking... Uncle's arrived. Also, I'm very tight with money. So Rosborne, he'd be one of those nicknames where eventually he'd just be called Roswell and no one would be able to remember why. And then finally, we've got David Linghorn Baker. He sounds like a guy that directed films in the 50s and bad stuff came out posthumously. God, I wish he didn't have Horn in his name. So, Francis, I know you've got stuff going on. It's a podcast, right?
Yeah, so I've started this new podcast. It's called Francis Foster Sorts Your Life Out. Mm-hmm. We put a couple of episodes out already, and it's a lot of fun. Basically, people email in, and then I sort their problems out. And I'm starting to get big-name guests on the show. We've booked a few in, both American and UK. So it's a lot of fun. Basically, you email in, and then because I'm not a psychotherapist or any type of therapist or a doctor or psychiatrist, I know what I'm talking about, and I'll sort you right out, mate. And that's it. That's the show.
Should my older audience members still listen?
Of course, mate. We talk about everything. We talk about a lot of things prostate-related, so they'll love it.
See, you did it again. I tried to give you an opportunity for a fucking olive branch, but listen, no, do check out Francis's podcast.
Oh, and one more thing, can I ask? Just please follow me on Instagram. Do your audience go on Instagram, Francis J. Foster?
My Instagram, it's a slow builder, I would say, to the point where I've had a recent run. Now, some people go mad on Instagram. They'll like pick up like 100,000 followers in a month. If I pick up 100 in a week, I start Googling to see if I'm in the process of being cancelled. I think I'm literally being trolled. I feel like, oh, shit, my name must be in the public eye for some reason. But, give us both a follow on Instagram. As you could probably guess, I'd imagine you, like me, we're not photo guys. I mean, this isn't the greatest pitch in the world to follow us on Instagram. But every so often, if you're on Instagram, I'd just call it Nosy Bastards. That's what I'd call that website. Because most of the time, people on Instagram just go, ooh, where did they go? What were they wearing when they went there? What kind of holidays do they have? What do they look like in swimwear? All right, Oasis. So at the end of a week of massive hype, it was dropped last week that Oasis were getting back together. It was beautifully handled by the PR. I mean, it was an object lesson in how you get people excited about something you're ultimately going to charge extra for. And then everyone was set up with their laptops. They were coordinating with friends. And we spent a whole day, if you were on social media, of people moaning about being 250,000th in a queue for a stadium that only holds 90,000, which I would have thought wasn't a good omen, but there you go, given that most people aren't going to just buy one ticket either. And then there was a kind of aftermath to it whereby there was surge pricing. Now, I can first up say, and I'm sure you'll join me in this, Francis, in my live shows, you will never get surge pricing, partly because the demand won't be there, but I can guarantee to you on my next tour that I don't know what tickets will be. Their probably face value won't be more than, they're normally about like 18 or 20 quid. That's it. That's the ticket price. Yeah. Some venues move within that because of their location. Then they have their own booking fees. I will not say you're going to be charged an extra £2.20 so you can sit at the front and look up my nose. There you go. That's a promise. Are you willing to make a similar promise here today, Francis?
Yeah, I think so, mate. I think so. I think I'll do that.
What you do end up with the way that ticketing has gone, particularly since the pandemic, is that the gouging is incredible. And what made Oasis gigs great, right, was that there were a lot of young, predominantly working class people that went to these shows and were mad for it. Do you know what I mean? They're fucking mad for it. But the moment you get into the realms of 400 quid tickets for standing, that is not mad for it people, all right? That is people my age and above that have the disposable income to do it. People that probably bring those, you know, those little fold-out seats that you bring that people watch when they go see the proms, the proms in the park. There'll just be loads of people wanting a sit-down. There'll be no mosh pit. The moment somebody, you know, like sometimes in a mosh pit, they create that space. Somebody will just go and lie down in the middle of it.
And do you know what it's going to be? It's like, there's not going to be no mosh pit because the people there won't be able to stand around, number one, for that long. And number two, they won't be able to even be in the mosh pit for longer than half an hour before they'll need to go to use the loo again.
Are we going to get reported to Ofcom for age racism in this episode? I'm really sorry. Yeah, I think that seeing Oasis reformed, there is this thing now, I suppose it's like to say you were there.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of live shows that benefit from this. It's just seeing the brothers on stage to say that you did it. Will that create the greatest atmosphere in the world? I'm guessing not. Although I suppose there might be a lot of people that haven't had a proper night out for a while, so they'll go and get a bag in. They'll probably over. Maybe they will be mad for it, and maybe they will have cardiac issues afterwards. I don't know. I suppose the one thing that I hope is that maybe it stimulates a revival of the love for bands, like rock and roll bands, because dance music and grime has been so massive for a while now. Maybe just the spectacle of four or five blokes, you know, with instruments just creating a noise and that being exciting. Maybe we can get that back together again.
One of the things I actually find really worrying about Gen Z is, you know, they're not into music.
What?
They're not into music. They're not into music at all.
I mean, that's fairly broad. We're going to have to put flesh on that bone. Gen Z are not into music.
No. Like, so for instance, with our generations, we had music and music created subcultures. Well, actually, so subcultures created the music, which then went mainstream, if you think about it. So for instance, indie bands started off in small clubs, then progressed through the ranks, and then some of them became huge multinational bands, like Oasis, for instance, or Suede, or, you know, bands like that. But what you have now is, because all the kids are online, and there's kids who actually told me this, is that as a result...
That sounded creepy. It was kids that told me this. What, in the fucking park?
No, mate, because
all right, kids, do you listen to music?
Hello, kids. Yeah, do you want to listen to my music? Unzip. I mean, this is going to sound even worse now. I've got loads of young kids working for me. And
oh
by,
my God.
Because they do all the tech, Jeff. Like, I'm talking about 19, 20-year-olds. I'm not, like, talking about 8-year-olds down at Columbia Mine.
So what you're saying is they're not committed to it in the same way. What, do they think music is a bit cringe?
No, I'm saying it's not part of the social fabric that it was for us, whereby the way that we would connect with somebody, with a potential mate, is ask them, oh, are you into football? Are you into this? And what bands do you like? It was, like, one of the top three.
Yeah.
But if you think when we were kids, like, so when we were much, much younger, I remember the start of the grunge movement. And, you know, you would connect with people like, oh, do you like Nirvana or do you like Pearl Jam? Mm-hmm. number, and then it went into the Britpop era, and then it was very much, oh, Blur, or, I mean, even though that was largely manufactured, Blur or Oasis. But the kids don't see the world through that particular prism now because they're all very much online. It's about Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. So this idea that you can be really passionately affiliated to a band or a form of music is kind of archaic, really.
I suppose it is, and I think that what you're talking about there speaks to a truth that actually, just trying to tie into the Labour thing, the Labour Party's problems, is that memory, short-term memory, people like, for example, the pandemic wasn't an issue at the last election. Now, if you'd have said during the pandemic that this would literally not come up on the doorstep in the next election, people would have thought you were mental. And yeah, music movements don't last very long. They move as a trend. So if people aren't into the same band that they were into in the middle of last year, are they really going to spend much time thinking about the last 14 years, right, of Conservative government? There's a definite temporary state that we all live in now, and a presentism. So the idea that you could have a cultural movement like Britpop, I mean, I love dance music, but I see it on TikTok. I sort of like, oh, I love this DJ, and I watch him for about a month, and then 3 months later, I go, oh, fuck yeah, I thought that guy was great. I don't know how, with the abundance of material and content being thrown at you, as you say, that you can culturally key in to a musical movement for that long.
No, because if you think about it, like with bands, what happened was, you know, they'd start out and they'd get in that little like transit and they'd go up and down the country and you'd slowly build momentum like that. Like, I remember listening to an interview with Robbie Williams. He was really interesting, actually. He said that the way they persuaded the record company to sign Take That was because all the record companies like, no, I'm not interested, blah, 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 boy bands, don't know, everybody, this is, everything's about guitar, indie rock. And then they handed the record company a mailing list, handwritten, of course, back then, of 50,000 addresses.
And I'm going to guess that most of these are teenage girls. Immediately, there was safeguarding alarm going off in my mind.
No, it was the 90s, mate. It was a better time. There was no safeguarding. There's none of this woke nonsense.
God, why have I got an image of you sitting around with your little interns going, this is how it used to be, right? It'd be an intern of the week, and then they come and sit on Uncle Francis's lap.
And they were grateful for it. Not like you lot now with your, yeah, I've got my rights.
We have to end this discussion now. Okay, so I hope you enjoyed me and Francis bickering or flirting. I couldn't really work out what it is. It felt like we just needed at some point to meet up in a car park and fucking wrestle.
Yeah, exactly. Topless.
Okay, you put that in. So do check out Francis's podcast. Remind us of the title of it, mate.
It's called Francis Foster Sorts Your Life Out.
Okay, and remember, if you do see him doing live dates, do support. There are still, sadly, in our industry, people who will literally say the cancel culture is a myth whilst writing letters to breweries to try and get comedians cancelled. You know what I mean? It's a bit like, you know, people smoking outside a pub. I might not like that smoke, but I also respect that some people want to smoke outside pubs and some people might want to joke about things that might upset me. So do support that. And listen, mate, I hope to see you out and about soon.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a question, was it? I just said I hope to see you out and about. The question.
Yeah, like, it's almost sounded like a mafia threat there, mate.
Hey, I hope to see you out and about. Maybe I'll catch you on the river. Maybe at the bottom of it. Who fucking knows? You're a nice guy. Anyway, my love to the wife and the kids. All right, this has been What Most People Think. We'll be back next week with another show.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.